how's your relationship with your money? Or better yet, how's your perceived relationship with your money? How do you perceive your relationship with money to be? Do you think you've got it figured out? Or are you one of those people you're just like, Khosi, I keep listening to you speak to all these guests week after week after week, and I want to know more. I want to do better. But man, if I just look at where I am financially, I just feel like, man, I don't think there's hope for me. I'm just too far gone. And I'm just stuck in this place where I just feel like, man, there's no hope for me. And if that's the case and where you find yourself, you could be falling into what is referred to as financial dysmorphia, which is this distorted perception of one's financial situation. Sounds hectic, but man, it's more common than what we realize. So much so, that's why we got Andile Jonas, who is the head of marketing and momentum, to join us on the line this afternoon to really double click into what that looks like and why it's so important for us to take note of it. And more importantly, how do we actually grow from this place to become better people? Andile, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to Drive 3 to 6.
Hi, Khosi. Thank you for having me and welcome to your listeners as well.
It's great to be chatting to you this afternoon on something that I think a lot of us would sometimes feel like, no, man, I don't think this is something that I'm seeing in my own life. So maybe let me ask you, from your wisdom and your experience, to really maybe break it down for us. What is financial dysmorphia and what does it look like in our lives?
It's a big word, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So financial dysmorphia, it's a term that describes a little bit of a misalignment or disconnect between your financial position and how you feel about your financial position, right? So everything either feels exaggerated or out of proportion.
Hello, Andile, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Can I ask you if you could turn the radio down in the back just a little bit softer, because I'm starting to hear you twice in the background and on air, if that's all right with you. You double click, 100%, as you continue to just break down what financial dysmorphia is.
All right. Look, it's a scenario. Oof, I'm also hearing double. I'm not sure what to do.
Is that better?
I hope so.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead.
I'm referring to someone perhaps who could have a steady income, no debt, maybe even a couple of investments, but still feel like they're not in control of their finances. Or on the other side, you could be in deep, deep financial trouble and not recognize the urgency of your situation. So I suppose simply, it's when your financial self-image doesn't line up with reality, right? It creates, I don't know, anxiety, maybe a bit of shame, or false confidence. Now, The idea is that it's not just about your wallet, it's about how you see your wallet, really.
Mm. And I think this is so hard because we already have such a tough relationship with our finances. I mean, whenever you have the conversation, anything financially related, you realize that for a lot of people, it's just like, man, I don't even know where to even start. There's a bit of shame, there's sadness. So our relationship with our finances, and like you're rightfully saying, not so much what's in our wallet, but towards money itself, can sometimes be hard. And I think this is where we fall into the comparison trap and comparison of people in the life or in the world of social media. This could be especially rife. How does this fuel this financial dysmorphia that we could sometimes find ourselves in?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, when you spend a lot of time on social media, it's a strange phenomenon, I think, in our generation. It gives us a constant and unfiltered access into other people's lives, right? So, or at least the best looking parts of their lives. We see someone's new car, some lavish holidays, someone announcing a property purchase, and naturally we'll compare. But what we're comparing it to is our full, unfiltered, sometimes messy reality. We don't get to see the debt behind the luxury or the generational wealth behind somebody's sort of home purchase. So we start to believe we're not doing enough, or we're not making consistent or meaningful progress. This is how comparison distorts our self-worth, and it causes us to doubt ourselves financially. And again, this is why having context matters. If you're saving for a long-term goal, building an emergency fund or investing, that's incredible progress. Even if it doesn't look flashy on Instagram, I always say in my team, if I could park my RA in my driveway, we'd be so successful. We scroll through other people's milestones and start questioning our own progress. but success isn't always visible.
So I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I think you remind me of my upbringing. My mother used to say something in Tswana, she'd always say "Malapahalekane," which very loosely translates to families aren't alike. And she'd always say this in light of you don't know with what you're seeing what's the background story of what has resulted in them being in this place. And I think it's so true. But also this mention of, if you could park your RA, your retirement annuity, in the garage, it would be something completely different. My assumption, would I be wrong in thinking that being in this place of financial dysmorphia, having a horrible relationship, so to say, with your finances because of comparison at some point, would influence and affect my ability to actually make sound decisions, because I'm going to try to keep up with the Kumalos, I'm assuming?
Absolutely. When your mindset is disconnected from reality, right, from your actual finances, I think you tend to make emotionally driven decisions. So you might overspend to match a lifestyle you think you should have, or you might avoid investing or saving because you feel too far behind, or you might hoard money. And I've seen this. You might hoard money out of fear, even when that money could be working for you in a different format. So I think financial dysmorphia leads people to focus on the wrong things, appearances instead of sustainability, short-term fixes instead of long-term growth. And I think this is where somebody like a financial advisor becomes so valuable, that they bring clarity and objectivity. They're going to ask you, what's your goal? What's your, you know, what are your dreams? Then they match a plan to that which makes sense for you. Good financial advice typically isn't just about numbers. It's actually you in those numbers. When your view of money is blurry, your decisions will be too.
Sure. It's getting a little bit quiet, so to say, in the streets of Pretoria, because I think so many of us relate with what you're saying right now, where it feels so personal, because I think we've been in that place so many times. I know if I look into my own life, I've been there often, and I'm having to talk myself out of it. And I want to maybe just kind of lean into this direction. One would think, okay, more money would make it all work out. But I'm almost assuming that because of this relationship with finances, one would then respond in a certain way. Should they get more money? Should they get a raise? Should they find themselves with unexpected wealth? What are some of the common things that you kind of see someone who has this financial dysmorphia has when they do find themselves with more money, which one would think would kind of, quote unquote, take them out of this place where they feel stuck in?
Yeah, look, you know, it's an interesting question, because you'd think receiving more money would solve financial stress, right? But for someone with financial dysmorphia, it can actually make things worse, right? They might feel pressure to upgrade their lifestyle immediately, or, you know, to prove they've made it. Or they may fear losing it and feel paralyzed about how to use it wisely. The irony, of course, is that your financial behavior doesn't always change because your income does. If your mindset hasn't shifted, you'll still feel like you're behind, even after a big promotion or an inheritance or a windfall.
I'm so sorry, Andile, I'm jumping in while you're speaking. I need you to say that again, because I think that's where a lot of us get stuck in, that this idea of just more money and financial relationships and money spending habits. Just say that again.
Yeah, so I meant there's a little bit of irony in that. Just because you've got a lump sum that lands in your lap doesn't mean your financial problems necessarily will be solved if your mindset hasn't changed. You've actually got to adopt a mindset that incorporates your reality. And that means understanding exactly what your money is doing. And this is the point here. It's why structured, context-aware planning is powerful. A raise or a windfall is beautiful, right? But it's an opportunity to revisit your goals. Where do I want to go? What are my dreams? Secure your future through some or other financial tool so that you are aiming at something consistently. The best outcomes come from making those decisions with your future self in mind, not your social media followers. You know what I mean? A raise can open doors or trap you in habits.
I know exactly what you mean. And so much, it's so easy that so many of us could find ourselves being drawn by social media, even if it's a social media of the neighbors in my street. And it's not so much digital. We can definitely relate to that one. Andile, before we wrap up our time together, obviously the question becomes, okay, I'm hearing what you're saying. How do I move? What are some practical steps to realign my perception with my finances? Or maybe actually better yet, and it's a twofold question to close off our conversation, is to say, okay, how can I recognize that I might be having this inaccurate view of my finances? And then second of all is to say, in light of that, and with what you've mentioned of some of the consequences and some of the limitations that it could bring, what are some practical steps I could do to realign my perception of my financial reality?
Yeah. Look, I think maybe just recognizing it is quite important, and I would do a little bit of an internal audit to start, right? So maybe take a pen and paper and write down what your emotions are when it comes to money. Do you feel anxious about money, or when your bills are due? Do you downplay your progress or ignore milestones, or do you chase validation when you're spending? I think audit that kind of internal thing. Another clue, by the way, is avoidance. So, you know, people who avoid checking their balances or delay opening that statement, that's a clear signal that something deeper is going on. So I think maybe just an audit of your inside. Financial dysmorphia thrives in the dark. When you face your numbers with honesty, you start to take back control, right? So I think that's the starting point. What to do about it? I mean, I think you'll probably find various different pieces of advice depending on who you speak to. But I think from the experience I have, I would suggest track your real progress. Celebrate the small wins, right? So what's happening when? Have you done it? Have you achieved it? And celebrate those things. Celebrate everything. Even if you don't have to spend money to celebrate it, applaud yourself for small wins. The second is I would use the tech that's available. Use the tools that are available. You know, there's products that will help you benefit from taxation on your investments and growth, right? That'll help you build and grow your money automatically. The third is an obvious one that I will say every chance that I get, and that is speak to an advisor. If you're sick, you go to a doctor. If you need legal advice, you go to a lawyer. For money, I would speak to a financial advisor. They have a perspective grounded in context and facts. When it comes to, I suppose, the dysmorphia specific things, I mean, unfollow those comparison triggers. You know, I curate my social media feed. Instead of aspirational content, I look for educational or motivational stuff, right? So I don't follow the crowd. And then reflect. I'm a big reflector. Sit back and think about what's happened. Look at your financial plan and say, what did we do well this month? What's the one thing I can improve? That would be my sort of practical steps to realign perception with financial reality.
Andile, this has been so informative that I think there's a number of people that's probably going, oh my goodness, I need to go and take a look at my financial reality and see if what I'm seeing, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling is a direct reflection on that. If they are somehow finding themselves together, and go do those practical steps that you've left us with this afternoon. Thank you so much for being able to share with us some of the insight that you've had. For someone who might be listening and maybe wants to reach out to you, is there maybe an email address or contact number that they can be able to use?
I do not have a contact number other than my cell phone at this point. So perhaps I can give you one offline.
Sure, 100%.
All right. Thank you so much.
100%. Thank you so much, Andile. I really appreciate it. It's Andile Jonas, who is the head of marketing at Momentum. Such a great conversation.